This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
It is our Monday view of the nation. And as I said, today we're using a little bit of poetic license, a little bit of literary prowess and creativity to discuss the view of the nation. The view of the nation isn't always from a political or an economic lens. Our artists are often the mirror of our society. They are often the conscience of the society. And yet when they comment, we don't really give them the pride of place that we ought to. And yet here are the figures. The creative industry across Africa is valued at about $1 billion US. And a significant proportion of that money is generated right here in South Africa's creative economy, which involves a series of businesses such as museums, libraries, those in architecture and design, music, arts, films, and theatre, and also the performance of music as well, musical theatre, I'm going to call it that. In South Africa alone, the creative arts account for 7% of employment. And yet, when we hear about artists struggling with officials, we just think it's an individual problem versus an issue that needs to be sorted out at a much higher level. And yet, when you speak to artists and say, what is the challenge you're facing? The challenge is not their creativity. That's innate. That's talent. It's the enabling environment. And that's policy. That's policy around the arts. And so today, we're looking at the view of the nation from the prism of the lens of the artists, the artists, and the policymakers in the creative arts. And I'd like to say the warmest welcome to somebody we all know as a renowned opera singer, but she's also the founder of I Am For The Arts. I'm For The Arts. I am number four, The Arts. Sibongile Mngoma, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning to your listeners.
And thank you for coming through. And I know that later on we'll be joined by Dr. Munyaradzi Chitaboko, who is the head of department for cultural policy at Wits University. But firstly, paint a picture of us, the view of this nation from the prism of your lens.
Okay, let me just say that you've actually captured it beautifully by saying that artists are the mirror to the soul of the nation, more than just, you know, what the outside looks like. It's the soul, it's the innate response to everything that happens around us. And when artists speak out, usually it takes a very long time to you touch that soul, and a lot of the time it scares you. And when you put it out there, you're essentially saying, I have faced my biggest fear and I'm ready to share it with the world. And the world looks at it and they say, entertainment. It's not always entertainment. Sometimes it's healing and sometimes it's education. It's a lot of different facets to the arts and the creativity. And so when we don't have support, like you rightly pointed out, it essentially means that we cannot hold up a mirror, firstly to ourselves, and secondly to the greater nation. And as ambassadors to the world, whichever way you look at it, artists remain our best ambassadors to the world. And there's no running away from that. And we have to really look at how we nurture that and how we grow that and how we celebrate that. Celebrity cannot be about being naked. Celebrity has to be about excellence at some point in this country.
You know, and you know, they often say, well, back it up. And so what we like to do on the show, as best as we can, we back it up. So when we look at the export of South African creativity, whether it's films that are coming out of Netflix or it's the amapiano music that's being played in clubs all over the world, or it's South African writers publishing their books and then those books being exported to the world, we are talking about a value of 15% to the creative economy. And in terms of cultural occupations, it's 44% of that economy. So a trade surplus of 15% is what people like you do in terms of generating value for South Africa internationally. So it is not a fluke and it is not negligible.
Indeed. And that is why it's still baffling that creatives are still not regarded as workers by the Labour Department, hence the issue of policy. It's very important that we understand that artists are no longer just contractors as they are now classified as. Mm. They are now workers. We contribute. We genuinely are an important part of the value chain of the economy of this country.
Mm. And it's baffling to me why artists are not considered to be workers in terms of labor policy. So what is the category of an artist when you are being profiled in the census? What do they say about people like you?
Well, initially we were, what was the word? We were vagrants.
No.
Yes, at some point we were classified as vagrants, and then at some point, I guess, to move away from being called vagrants, we called ourselves freelancers. Now we just called contractors. So I don't know what the difference is between an artist and any other person who puts in the work that needs to be paid for, because it's all of it is just service provision and it's paid for. So I don't know what makes us contractors as opposed to laborers like everybody else. Mm. We all labor.
And as a service provider, a freelancer, or what people say solopreneurs, you're still obligated to pay tax. You pay it as a provisional taxpayer, which sometimes is higher than a pay-as-you-earn worker, actually.
Well, it's not provisional, because think of it this way. During the applications for PAYS or any other funding that is provided by government, you have to be tax compliant. So it's no longer provisional tax. So at 25%, it's a lot of money to pay when you're not earning regularly and you have no safety net. So artists have gone beyond the point where we used to be maybe 20 or 25 years ago. We are at a different point now, and it's time that our Department of Arts and Culture assists the process of talking to the other departments, DTI, Labour, Small Business, all those other government departments. They have to assist the process to ensure that artists get what they deserve. That's what they're here for. Mm. They are not just there to disperse funds. They are also there for policy. Mm. So they need to be doing something correct to ensure that artists are not just seen as entertainment in a club or entertainment at a birthday party, but they are workers. These are people that
have a job.
They create work.
Yeah.
You talk about unemployment in this country. We create some of the major employment in this country. Wherever there are artists and there are performers, there will also be other service providers, food, hair, makeup, clothes. There is so much transport. It's a lot.
Mm. Yep. That whole value chain.
It's a whole value chain.
You say it's time that the Department of Arts and Culture got involved by creating some kind of a harmonization of policy with the Department of Trade and Industry and Labour, so those with the deep pockets and who can regularise that work and formalise that work, so that, in your words, artists get what they deserve. What is it that artists deserve?
Artists deserve a decent life, like any other South African. They have a right to shelter, a right to decent health care, which doesn't happen when you don't have a stable income and an enabling environment to create. At the moment, with the lockdown, the one thing that we all took away is that artists are not protected. our laws don't protect artists. Because like you say, the question is, what do they deserve? It's not entitlement when people are putting in the work. They're not just asking for a hat. You're not just coming with a hat in hand and asking for arms. We are saying, let people work and earn their living, and let them be protected the same way as everybody else is. If you can get your tax return because you're paying your tax regularly, then surely it should be regulated so that it's not willy-nilly like it's been the past couple of years, where people decide how, whenever they feel like, that they will pay and they will, then artists will get their returns. It doesn't work like that. And the truth is, where there's no law, there's no sin. And at the moment, there just isn't enough policy and legislation where the arts are concerned.
Before we talk about what policy around the arts really stipulates in detail and creating that enabling environment, I want to get your sense on this term soft power, because this is where I think the arts really have a lot of value and traction internationally. It's if you look at Nigeria and Afrobeats and Nollywood, many people, up until they watch Nigerian films, just thought Nigeria was just this country of really ragtag, irresponsible people, all the stuff that is said that's disparaging about them. And then you start to watch them in Made in Nigeria movies and you realize, like everybody else, they have aspirations. They live really well. They love beautiful things. They spend big. They party big. They celebrate in really elegant ways. And now, all of a sudden, Nigerian culture is all the rage. It's informing productions like Wakanda Forever and Woman King. Those stories are coming out of Hollywood because of the last decade of Nollywood. And that's what we call by soft power. Other countries can go to war to impose their will on you. Other countries can export their culture to slowly teach you about their intrinsic value as people. What do you make of the soft power of South African artists and the culture that's being exported to the world?
You know, what is scary for me is that we still haven't recognized that we have been exercising our soft power for a long time. And the problem is not the world. The problem is us. We don't recognize our own power. We don't celebrate our own power. We constantly wait for somebody else. Until the world started making Jerusalem a trend, as South Africans, we were not really paying attention. So it's not that we don't know, we haven't been exercising our power. It's that we constantly wait for somebody else to validate our own power, which has been there for many, many years. And it doesn't need validation. It just needs us to understand and recognize, because without understanding, we will keep saying, yeah, but we don't have, we only have this, or we don't have, we have a lot. And it's just, it's a mental shift. There's a paradigm shift that needs to happen for South Africans that will take us to the next level. And it has nothing to do with anything but us waking up and stopping being a nation of, We clown. Mm-hmm. We like to joke about everything. And I get that maybe it's because of the trauma we've been through, but we also need to acknowledge that sometimes we don't take ourselves seriously, even when the world does.
And so it's a mindset in South Africa as a market, as well as an industry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's us.
We're in conversation with Sibongile Mngoma, opera singer and founder of I'm For The Arts, and we're getting a view of the nation from the prism of the lens of the artists who drive so much of our cultural currency locally and internationally, and as you heard, account for so many jobs on the value chain, but just intrinsically are 7% of employment in this country. They are workers.
Power Talk, the view of the nation.
With Sibongile Mngoma, and if we can get the line up and running, we'll be joined by Dr. Munyaradzi Chatikopo, who is from Wits University's Cultural Policy and Management Department. So let's talk about policy, Sibongile Mngoma, as we're talking about why we have to change our perspective on who South African artists are and what their value and contribution to South Africa is, just beyond storytelling, but economically and also in terms of building heritage and new heritage industries. What is not, what, firstly, what is right with policy?
Okay, like I said earlier, it's about where there are no rules, there's no sin. So essentially, if people are being exploited, you can't say they are being exploited because there's nothing to say they shouldn't be exploited or what is fair practice. So when we are sitting with policy that protects not only the policy makers, but the people on the ground, then we are sitting with a potentially fair situation where you can say, okay, I have been robbed this way. But right now, you can't even rob artists because there's no law to say you should, what works and what doesn't work. And our biggest issue is that we have people who have said for many, many years, over 20 years of policy makers sitting around tables, writing policy, but we have a problem of implementation. So we're sitting with a revised white paper that was accepted by Parliament last year in March, and it's still not implemented. It's still sitting on somebody's desk. And in the meantime, artists are still struggling. If that white paper had been implemented by now, we wouldn't have had the situation we had with the lockdown funding problems, particularly when it comes to the issues with the NAC and all those government agencies that disperse money. But because the policy is not implemented, so in essence, it hasn't been tested as a policy, whether it works or not. So you're sitting with problems that are ongoing and they keep coming back.
So like most things in South Africa, it's not the lack of ideas or even policy, it's the implementation. But let's just take away all of those things that are fundamentally wrong. And from that white paper, what is right is what I'm trying to establish. What is it about it? When you look at it, you say, just get it done because it might actually empower the artist. What is promising in that white paper?
So there are so many issues that have been troubling artists for the past however many years we've been in the new dispensation. And those issues are addressed in the white paper. For example, you're sitting with the community theatres and spaces that can be used. You know, artists struggle with space to work because of the government-funded institutions. It costs too much money to use them.
Okay.
So that policy is in the white paper. And if that were to be implemented, then artists would be able to then use those facilities at no extra cost. And those facilities would also serve the communities and not be dilapidated as they are right now because they are run down and they are being used as drug dens. So imagine if policy was implemented and some of the spaces were used for nation building as opposed to killing the nation with drugs. You see what I'm saying? So there's a lot that can be done with the policy that's there. Even the education that is being offered, imagine if the policy was implemented and the ideas in the white paper were used to push for a different outcome as opposed to the 30% pass mark that we are sitting with. The arts would be assisting our children to excel in our school.
And the thing about arts is this, and this I'm not saying research, I'm just speaking anecdotally. So I'm not, I was never going to be an actress or whatever, but I had the privilege in school of studying music, joining the debating society, studying drama and doing all those Greek plays. What it does for a child who is South African and has never been anywhere else in the world is open their mind to the fact that there's a much bigger world out there, that there are different ways of looking at the world out there. There are different interpretations of your reality in the world out there, because the sun shines for people in Greece as it does for people in Nairobi, as it does for people in South Africa. But we have different poetry around the sun because we experience sunrises differently depending on your geographical location. And so when we're talking about skills, hard skills, you know, we're also talking soft skills, the stuff that makes our children a little bit more worldly. And that's actually the stuff that gets taught in the arts, not in a science lab.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that our biggest imports have been artists. But it's precisely because of what you're saying, the fact that there's a broadening of the mind that happens when you live in your imagination. And we do most of the time. Mm-hmm. You know, our music, our books, you know, and all the different art forms that we use take us into spaces that we don't live in on a daily basis. And it also helps us to deal with trauma. A lot of the time, we don't know what to do with the trauma we've been through. People who've been raped, people who have children who come from divorced families, when you sit with them and you work their trauma through art, it takes them away from the difficult language of speaking about trauma, and they can travel and explain exactly what it is that they've gone through. And that way, then you're able to work with the other professionals to see how you can assist the process. So there are different roles that are played by the arts that we are not really tapping into because we are not serious about finding out what it is that the arts do.
So I've heard you say the arts create jobs. The arts heal and a personal but also perhaps a collective trauma. The arts prompt your imagination, and the arts are a cultural export for South Africa, bringing in much needed revenues to the country. It's time the arts were taken more seriously than what they already are. We're in conversation with opera singer and founder of I'm for the Arts, Sibongile Mngoma. We finally were able to connect to Dr. Munyaradzi Chatikobo, who is the head of Department for Cultural Policy and Management at WITS. He'll enter the conversation shortly after the news update.
Speak up. Call the power line on 0861-987-000.
Please do. It's a different kind of view of the nation, and I think an important one, because often we think the view of the nation is only from a political perspective or an economic perspective or issues around crime. The artists often mirror what the society is. They tell us the uncomfortable truths about our society, about the darkness of our souls, but also the depth of our creativity and intellect and possibility. They narrate the stories of our cultural histories. They remind us who we are and what we can be. And how do we reward them? With very little financial security, respect, and policy certainty. And so this is why we're having the conversation we're having with the opera singer and founder of I Am Arts, Sibongile Mngoma, now joined by Dr. Munyaradzi Chatikobo, who's the head of Department for Cultural Policy and Management at WITS. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Munyaradzi. And I know it's been a struggle because of load shedding to get you connected, but here you are, and we're grateful.
Thank you so much, Lerato. And good morning to your viewers. I'm really excited to be here. I joined when you were having a very in-depth conversation, and this is really, really important. Yeah. So when I was listening to you, I'm sorry, I don't know whether there are any formalities that you expect from me before I get
go,
to...
Just get to it. I can see you're raring to go, so just go for it.
Yes, yes. So when I joined in and listening to the conversation which you were having with Sibongile, I could not agree with you any more. You know, it's very true that the arts play a very pivotal role in our society. Mm. And there's a quotation, a historic quotation sadly, from Nazi German, when the Joseph Goebbels, who was a propagandist for the Nazi government, said, when I hear the word culture, I reach for my gun. What that says is that culture is equivalent to a very powerful weapon, which requires a retaliation by taking out a gun. So on the basis of that quotation, we cannot, the power of culture, the power of art and culture is a means to explore human potentials and human possibilities is not questionable. And everyone knows that, including people who are in leadership positions, because in this case, Joseph Goebbels was part of the ruling party during that time, during Nazi Germany. And every leader throughout the world understands the power of culture. But the questions which we grapple with every now and then when we have conversations about this is, why is it that arts and culture are not given their prominent position in our society, in every individual's life? And we theorize about some of the reasons. And some of the reasons which we come up with is that it's so powerful that it's a threat to the status quo. It threatens the powers that be. But sometimes one might then say, is that not a harsh conclusion to think that every leader is afraid of art and culture to the extent of stifling it? So we often try to find a balance in our conversations. But the fact is that arts and culture are something that is needed by every individual. And if afforded, then we will be talking about a different world altogether, where individuals have the right. the possibility to decide what they want in their lives.
You know, when you talk about culture, the intersection of culture and politics, it reminds me of 1966, Mao Zedong and the 10-year-long cultural revolution in China. The first thing that was done by this Chinese leader was to round up the writers, the artists, the musicians, because they hold a special pride of place in the minds of ordinary people. And it was known that when their ideas, when their songs and the lyrics in their music starts to touch the heart and mind of any and every person, it can create a revolution. And you've seen it in so many instances in the world, where in Chile's, you know, under Pinochet, the same sorts of things happened. Is you first go for the artist, because actually that's really where the ideas that can sow discontent foment in the works of the artists.
Absolutely. So under a dictatorship, that is possible. But in a democracy, that is not possible. So in a democracy, quite often we see censorship coming in different forms, and forms which might seem acceptable to society, forms which might be seen to be in line with democracy and principles of democracy, in such a way that it only becomes open to a few, that what is happening here is a censorship of sorts. What is happening here is a deliberate stifling. But when you look at it from the surface, you see a government which is doing everything in its power to make sure that culture is made available to all. And quite often, in my department, in cultural policy and management in the Wits of School of Arts, our starting point are conversations around democratization of culture, which means giving access. And access here means physical creation of physical spaces where people can engage in culture and engage in terms of creation and consumption, but also virtual spaces. Now, the recent 2 years, they have pushed us more to the virtual space, which, in our view, when I look at it, it makes it even more difficult for people to access culture because you know the story around how data is expensive and how it eliminates the majority of people from accessing the arts the way they should. So the principles of democratization and another principle is one of cultural democracy, which I can speak back to a little later. But the point I'm making is how in a democracy, the system seems to be supportive of society and artists.
I just want to stay on this issue because Sibongile Mngoma, when she was speaking, she was just frustrated and even lamenting the fact that policymakers today are the ones who seem to, quite frankly, disrespect artists by not creating a proper registry of the work that they do, an environment where they are regularized and formalized within the nexus of employment laws with the Department of Labor and even within the investment environment through the Department of Trade and Industry. And I'm wondering how South Africa got here, because when we go back to the power of artists and what we're saying about soft power and exports of culture, you think of the anti-apartheid struggle and actually how this issue was kept alive in the minds of the international community was through the musics of Miriam Makeba or a Jonas Gwanga or a Hugh Masekela. It was through the poetry of so many South African artists, the Dr. Lindiwe Mabuzas of this world, writing op-eds regularly in international journals and fora. It was the cultural boycotts of international teams refusing to play against the South African Springboks at huge international festivals. It was the Free Nelson Mandela concert that had an array of international artists from Nelson, from Michael Jackson to Sting and Paul McCartney at Wembley Stadium. It's actually the artists who reminded the world of how morally reprehensible apartheid is, and for people to start, you know, doing all sorts of cultural boycotts of South Africa. It was the artists who did that. And how can the leaders of today forget that?
Talking about policies and how sometimes the leadership uses politics in couch policies in their favor. Yes, I would agree if these were sentiments shared by Sibongile earlier on. I would agree with her to a certain extent. And why I'm saying to a certain extent is because there's something that happens when policies are put in place. And quite often the process is said to be consultative, but the nature of consultation to get the input of artists and all members of society is not that open and it's not very accessible. So from that end, I would agree that the leaders that be do not use strategies or approaches which enable active participation of all artists and all members of society. I completely agree because they are a series of road trips which are done around the country, meetings here, there, in Port Elizabeth or Kabeka now, in Durban, in but those meetings are not comprehensive enough to bring in all voices.
Right.
So there is a top-down approach in the policy-making process, which then leaves out the views of people who are directly impacted by those policies.
I'm going to ask one more question, and then I'd like you and Sibongile to engage each other. So she's talking about looking at the intrinsic value of what artists bring. And we're not talking cultural value, conversation and discourse. We're talking actual material value. How many jobs do they create? How many jobs do they account for? What are they contributing to South Africa by virtue of the taxes they pay, the investments that they make in various spaces, the concerts that are performed, who comes to see those concerts, the spend across the service industry, and why it's important to regularize them. So when you look at the wealth of arts and the broad spectrum of it, the arts, the crafts, the sculptors, the painters, the filmmakers, the musicians, the gaming industry, the museums, the libraries, those in architecture and design, how do you think the policymakers could start to create a more streamlined integration process for them in the economy?
May I request, as I take my breath,
I'll defer to her and then you come in, but you're definitely going to answer me because this for her is really the nub of it, is it not, Sibongile Mngoma?
You know, you keep nailing it because it's like, we've said these things over and over for so long, and it feels like we are not being heard. And on the question of how policymakers can assist the process, imagine if policymakers had sorted out the issue of grants. Artists don't need grants. Artists need to earn a living like anybody else. It's the issue of dignity. When you ask us to apply for grants, you are taking away our dignity. You are saying we are incapable of earning a living because you are making us disabled. We are not disabled. We want to be able to work. We are not asking for alms. We are asking for just enablement to work. Now, if policy said, when we apply for loans that allow us to conduct our business as opposed to grants that don't even enable us to do our business, we would find ourselves in a better economic space. Because right now we apply for grants at the NAC and the VF and all of that. It's not profit-based. It's based solely on how much money they will give you this year, and then you must come back again next year and ask for more. We are not trying to groom beggars here. We're trying to groom entrepreneurs, business people.
Okay, Doctor, over to you.
Oh, thank you. I'm hearing Spongile's view. My starting point, again, I would start by saying I partly agree. The part where I disagree is that there are art forms which require subsidies, and there are also art forms which can thrive in a space where financial principles are applied, where one can borrow funds and be guaranteed of getting making profits for them to be able to pay back those loans. But there are those practices which do not allow people to be able to generate adequate profit margins for them to be able to pay back. I think we need to recognize that there is room for both grants and loans, but considering the nature of the art form. So I'll give an example of film, for instance. Mm. It is a practice, or it is an art form where people can generate or get a loan, make a movie, and find platforms to distribute it and make money. But there are things like theater, particularly grassroots theater. When you give a loan to a grassroots artist, you are actually placing them under more precarious position because normally the loans come with conditions, repayment conditions, which are stringent, that if you don't pay, then we attach property and so on and so forth. So there are certain art forms which, if we go the loan route, then definitely we are further plunging artists in more difficult situations. So, but I agree that there is room for weighing those options and for the policymakers and implementers of policy to say how do we categorize, where do we give grants and where do we give loans? And I agree, grants in a way are an insult if you don't assess one's potential to generate profits.
Okay. We've got a couple of callers who'd like to engage both you, Dr. Munyaradzi Chati Kopo and Sibongile Mngoma. So let us open the line to you, Mpho, in Randfontein.
No. How are you? Thank you very much to you and the listeners, but also the guests. I wanted to just underscore your point, actually, that science, there's emphasis about science, mathematics, Christmas go there. But in building an under South Africa and the social in general, artists, and they're very key to build together society, whereas the poetry and writing in general. So the point I'm making is that we can't undermine the role that is played by artists. And I think government must go aggressively to also to help them grow, so that we don't subject them to loans, but we really build on them. I mean, one of the things that feel embarrassing in our country is that a lot of South Africans can't sing their national anthem. And art comes there to make it, but also to generate laughter and take us away from depression. I mean, we are sufficiently depressed by other things, but art, when you go to Market Theatre on Fridays, Wednesdays, you come there revived. Thank you very much.
And educated as well, because so much of what we don't know, we learn on stage or in music. Lisiba, good morning.
Good morning, ma'am. Thanks for taking my call. It's always difficult to call your station because, especially where you disagree with somebody, you really give facts. And, like, I think my call will just make a lot of noise. I appreciate you very much.
Thank you, sir.
The other thing, the thing is that the artists of today are actually complicit in their government making them disabled, because an artist uses their art to complain. They don't burn a tire, you know. The lady you're talking to, whom I like, and her music, I think the day they ban that music, they must bury me first, is that to now, to this day, she hasn't produced a single note where she is complaining or saying to the nation, this government that cannot even put a decent toilet at the school refused to recognize me or to give us whatever recognition during COVID. She hasn't done that.
Okay.
Artists don't do that, because the government of today is the one that is monopolizing gigs. So if they say a word against the government, they won't get a space in gigs.
I don't know. Let's ask Sponia. Are you compromised as artists?
All artists are compromised. And I think I understand where my brother's coming from, but I would want to correct him there. Maybe you haven't been following me lately. Maybe you're a little bit out of date in what I do. Maybe you just need to just dig deeper. You'll find what you're looking for, and it should be okay. So I'm not going to take that personally. I'll just say sometimes, you know, sometimes information is out of date that is going out there, and he can just Google and find the information.
Okay, but the point he was also making was artists, that artists could protest properly. Okay, so
other artists.
Yes, and artists could also really rally. So we're having a conversation now.
They can't rally now. They really can't rally now, the truth be told, because artists are compromised by other artists in the space. And that's the truth we need to tell, is that, yes, at some point artists could take on governments, and politicians used artists to take on governments. Our politicians today are the ones that are supporting artists before, so that they could raise their voices using their arts. But today, the politicians are using the same artists to suppress the voices of other artists in the space. So, yes, artists are compromised. And it's not because they want to be compromised. It's because other artists are actually being used the same way that artists were used by politicians before to raise their voices against the system. Now, artists are being used to shut down the voices of other artists.
Okay. Pascal in Houghton, good morning.
I just wanted to speak to the point of loans versus grants. I'm in the film industry myself, and I think it's a very important point. And as the gentleman said, the prof said, in film you can sort of project a revenue for the art you create and potentially pay back a loan, although in South Africa, honestly, that happens maybe 10% of the time. For the rest, these loans have to be written off or hang over the artist and stop them from making more after that. But in essence, there are many art forms that just can't do that. And I think that grants are there to enable artists to create art that is basically a representation of the zeitgeist of the society at the time, which is what artists have always done. And it's kind of a litmus test of what's going on. And because artists, in honest truth, the artists that I know are usually about surviving, not thriving. They're just trying to survive. And the funding they get is literally just to survive and make the art. They are also the ones in touch with the poorest of the poor, usually, of society. And their reflection in their art usually reflects that segment of society. And if you fund things through loans, you will, especially in the film industry, inevitably make things for the haves, not the have-nots. In other words, commercial ventures that the middle class can afford to pay for, whether it's movie tickets or otherwise. And you will, therefore, that art will reflect the zeitgeist of the middle class, which is not, you know, the problem. The problem is the lower class, right? Okay. And that's what art should be bringing to life.
Thanks for that, Pascal. We don't have much time, so I want to latch onto Pascal's word, not his word, but this term zeitgeist, which basically means tapping into the spirit or the mood of the day. Sibongile Mngoma, if you are producing something for South Africa today, whether it's music or film, what is the zeitgeist? What is the spirit of today, South Africa?
Healing. Healing. We need healing as a nation.
And Dr. Munyaradzi, what would you say? Today, the mood, the essence, the energy of South Africa ought to be?
I think for me, it's curiosity to understand more because with arts and culture, one needs to be on their toes all the time. So I would say curiosity to want more and understand more in order to make things better.
Okay. And I think those two things sum up the view of the nation. We need a nation that's more curious, and we need a nation that's healing, and we need the policymakers to give space to the artists to provide the content that brings those two things, curiosity and healing. It's been the Monday edition of Power Talk. In a short while, we'll be listening to the news and a Power Lunch. But I just thought, let's remember the music of Sibongile Mngoma. That's why artists matter.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.